Welcome to another episode of Give Him Hell, Bring Him. Jeff, have any recent events changed or impacted future cereal purchases that you may make in the near future?
No, it hasn't altered what I will and will not eat. So unless you've been living under a rock, you've certainly heard of this story.
I have a headline. So this is from,
okay.
I saw,
oh, you
this
read that
on Not the Bee, which I don't know if you knew this, but the Babylon Bee, which I am a great fan. They have another news, like a normal news site called, it's like Discern, whatever, that they started. Then they have a third sister site now called Not the Bee, which is basically like, these things sound so ridiculous that they sound like they should be Babylon Bee, but they are not satire. They're real. So here's the headline. I don't know how to say this, so I'm just going to say it. Topanga from Boy Meets World, husband found shrimp tails in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and they are beefing on Twitter, and there are also possible rat turds involved.
Yeah. That pretty well sums it up.
Yeah. And it's, if you read this, it is insane. Like, you look at the picture and there are straight up dried shrimp in, like, if you would go down and get, like, you can get dried shrimp at, like, you know, in the Hispanic or Asian food aisle, because they like grind them up and use them as like a seasoning, whatever. It's like, these are dried shrimp in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch. And then the Cinnamon Toast Crunch Twitter account tried to tell him that it was cinnamon
accumulated sugar, whatever. Yeah.
Yes. And then he also found some string, and then he looked and there were pictures, and there's also like these weird black things that appear to be like baked into it. And someone replied and was like, those are definitely mouse or rat droppings. Guaranteed they made a home in a bag of flour or other raw ingredient. And all of the shrimp string and everything else was their scavenged item. So basically,
yes,
a factory, which totally makes sense. And then Cinnamon Toast Crunch is telling them, first they said, FedEx us the shrimp. And he's like, no, I'm not. You told me it was sugar. I'm not going to send you all of the shrimp, because then I have no proof. Like, I'm sticking to my guns on this. And then they told him that it may be tampering, so that he should report it to the police department. And then they opened the other bag, because it was a family pack, and they found dental floss and more like rat poop turd looking things.
Like cooked into the cereal.
Yes. Oh, and then some just normal droppings. And then also, he said, I'm not going to walk into the police department yelling, here's some shrimp tails that General Mills told me to send you. and so then finally he found a lab, and there he found a lab to that would
go, they're gonna test DNA them. Test the
yes. So he said they're waiting an envelope. He said he is waiting on the envelope I agreed on from General Mills to send them back pieces of some of the shrimp tail, and then we'll leave home for the DNA testing. There will apparently be, some testing. So I don't know who Jensen Karp is, but,
he's Topanga's husband, man. That's all you need.
He's Topanga's husband, and he got shrimp in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and that won't change how I buy things, because I only buy Malt-O-Meal cereal. So that's why it's not going to change things for me. My main cereal is Malt-O-Meal going in bulk, so I can have multiple bowls at a time.
So here was my thought on the whole thing. The explanation that makes the most sense is that it was a rat, that whether it be they made a home in the flour, or, you know, even post-production somewhere, whatever, right? They made a home somewhere in the production process. Is that gross? Of course that's gross. Like, that's not okay. But crap happens, right? Like, I can wrap my head around that story making sense. Gross, figure it out, get it cleaned up. Everybody check your Cinnamon Toast Crunch for the next month or two. Make sure you didn't get one of the contaminated batches. But I can make sense of that story. What is concerning to me is how Cinnamon Toast Crunch, not even that they denied it, because that's just poor. That's like some recently college graduated person that has a social media manager job. Like, that person's just doing what they're told, right? Like, they got this weird picture of shrimp tails and cereal and said, boss, what do I do? And that boss said, yeah, let's see if they'll just go away. Tell them it's sugar. Okay, it's sugar. Oh, no, boss, this isn't going away. It keeps getting bigger.
I don't think boss saw the picture. Do you think boss saw the pictures?
No, I don't think so.
Because if boss saw the pictures, like, you look at it, it's a freaking shrimp.
Yeah, everyone in the world knows that's a shrimp. So that's what concerns me the most, is that the the higher ups of whether it's Cinnamon, I don't know how General Mills is like split up, right? Like, does General Mills have an individual company for each cereal?
Like,
am I the president of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, or am I the vice president of non-colorful cereal or something at General Mills?
I don't know. There's probably like a product head of whatever for each cereal, but I think it's probably all General Mills.
So whoever at General Mills that just said, here, social media manager, go figure it out. Like, that's the person that I'm the most upset with. As for the shrimp itself, I think it's hilarious. Here's what's concerning though, right, Garrett? Okay. So stuff happens. If things get into the cereal, whatever. I'm grossed out, make it right, away we go. The second bag had been taped together, meaning a rat isn't taping that hole. Somebody identified, this cereal, whether this is a General Mills employee, whether this was somebody at the Costco that they bought it from, somebody saw this torn apart bag of cereal, and the thought that went through their head was, crap, well, I better tape this up. Like, that is a problem. And I don't know how to wrap my head around that. Like, everything else I can kind of reconcile. That I can't understand. Can't get there.
I mean, maybe, well, I would say maybe it was like someone messed with it at the store, but the baked in, like, turdlings in the cereal is, you can't, like, that, you can't, no one at the store is going to be able to do that.
And the shrimp tails were like coated in sugar. Like, they had gone through the cinnamon toast process.
Right. It's not.
So it wasn't like somebody just like dropped shrimp tails into the bag.
Yeah. They were cinnamon toast.
Yeah.
Shrimp.
It is interesting that it happened to Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Like, if you were to take a poll of just random people, I think that Cinnamon Toast Crunch is the resounding number one cereal across general population.
Really? I mean, it's okay to me, but it's not like my favorite.
It's not my favorite either, but like, you talk to anybody, like, it's their favorite.
Yeah, I mean, Golden Grahams are much better than Cinnamon Toast.
Way better. Cinnamon Life is way better than Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Well, actually, they best the Malt-O-Meal s'mores. Have you tried that?
Yes, I have. You got to get out of here with the Malt-O-Meal
stuff. Okay, yeah, but it's Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Golden Grahams, Cocoa Puffs, and marshmallows all in one. Yeah, it's fantastic. Golden Grahams are a million times better. Like, Golden Grahams are the best cereal. Or if you just want like a classic, then Frosted Flakes.
Let me tell you what the best cereal is that you did not know was the best cereal. And I'm going to tell you that, and you're going to think I'm nuts. It's Funfetti cereal.
I've never even seen Funfetti cereal.
Well, go to Walmart, find it. It is Funfetti. I think it's like Pillsbury who does the cereal. Like, honestly, I think it's Pillsbury or one of those like Betty Crocker or something. It's a cake brand. It is the most, it is like cupcakes in your bowl of cereal. It seems gross, but they're like little kicks is what they kind of look like. But they have Funfetti speckles in them, and it tastes like the cereal version of a Funfetti cake.
Okay, I can get behind this. I don't know if you've ever tried it. I used to eat this all the time on my mission. They were called, it was anyone who served in Eastern Europe or lived there for whatever reason they've had. They call them Podushichki, which is like little pillows. And they call it a little pillow. And then it was basically like almost like Captain Crunch, but they were big. So like Captain Crunch, but they were, instead of being like the little tiny yellow squares, they're like the size of like a Golden Graham or a Cinnamon Toast Crunch piece, but maybe even a little bit bigger. And then they had cream filling in the middle, so it was straight up like eating frosting cereal. And that's what I imagine the Funfetti cake probably tastes like.
It has kind of, I mean, it's kind of, but I am pleasantly surprised that it isn't just like I'm eating a bowl, like a tub of frosting. Like, there's actually some, they got the cake part of Funfetti into the cereal. It's phenomenal. It's my favorite cereal. It's expensive, and I don't think Malt-O-Meal will buy it or will produce it for you. You will have to buy a box, but you won't regret it.
My stimmy hit my bank account this morning, finally. So we will, I can afford me some Funfetti cereal.
Yes, and go get it.
On that note, speaking of cereal, kids love breakfast cereal. And we put out, I did a kind of a very off-season mailbag today. And we got a couple of questions related to sports and things. But we also said that we would give very sage and profound life advice. And so we did get a question. It was, well, someone asked, what is the best way to instill good habits in young kids?
My kids generally have awful habits. So I'm the wrong person to ask this question. I don't know, man. My kids, I mean, I'm looking at my wife right now and she can nod and tell me if she agrees or not. My kids are some of the most, the least well-behaved children that we know. In fact, I'm going to have my wife come on and she's going to give you her advice.
Oh gosh.
Of how she would instill proper habits into children. Because if there is one parent in our house who does have an answer for this, it's my wife. Our daughter is great. And she, my wife deserves most of the credit. I think I've taken a lot of the responsibility with the two sons and it's a lost cause. So here's Jessica. Jessica's going to tell us what she does to instill good habits in children.
Oh, don't be so shy.
We have the worst kids ever. I don't even know. I don't even know. Malin, I think, came to us as a grown-up. And Dax and Bodie, Dax is okay. Bodie, he tells me I'm the worst mom at least once a day. Like, I'm the worst mom in the world at least once a day.
I mean, if one of my kids said that to my wife, they'd need to go to a chiropractor because they would be getting smacked.
It happens. Jeff just kind of gives them a good talking to, real good talking to, but
yeah, Bodie's. But Bodie's your problem child besides Jeff.
Besides Jeff, Bodie is the problem child. Yes.
Oh, I think you're, I just saw Jeff walk out of the room. So I think you were like fully promoted to co-host here.
I guess I'm here for the rest of the night.
I mean, I don't know. I guess it's like anything, right? It's just consistency. Whatever you're consistent at, that's what they're going to end up with. So, you know, it's like, I am not consistent at going to the gym or doing any sort of physical activity. That's why I look the way I do.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so, I mean, yeah, I would say, I mean, Jeff's back. You can be done now if you want to.
Okay. This was fun.
I think it's all just a matter of consistency, whatever you do. And I think really though, if you want to have your kids to have good habits, especially in school and work, you should praise inputs, not outputs, right? Because they can only control what they can control. And I think that's a good thing to learn from a young age in life is to not stress yourself out about things that are out of your control. You can only control what you do. But like, if your kid gets like straight A's, like, yes, obviously be like, yes, it's good, like good grades, whatever, but praise the fact that they studied, not the fact that they got straight A's, because it's going to come to a point, whether it's like in high school or in college or whatever, where something doesn't come easy to them. And if they just coasted rather than saying like praising good habits, like if you praise good outcomes, at some point they may have an outcome that doesn't come so easily and they won't have the habits in place. So that's what would be my advice, is to praise the good habits and like the inputs of the things that they can control that will be needed to overcome like something that's hard or difficult.
Well, I like that. Here's the thing. I'm not even going to pretend to have an answer. Like, I'm really not. My kids are monsters. Like, they're just monsters. You even heard it from my sweet, sweet wife. My kids are the worst. And I love them. They're great, but they're also monsters. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know how to raise children, or that I even pretend like I even have an idea of how to raise children. I get by every day. And when I go to bed that night, I'm surprised that I survived. And I'm surprised every morning when I wake up that all three of my children are still alive. And it is very much a day by day process. It's kind of like alcoholism. You know, in alcoholism, when you're recovering, they say, take it day by day. You're not trying to become sober forever. You're trying to be sober today. That's me, man. Like, I am just trying to be a dad today. I don't know what being a dad like tomorrow is going to look like. I have no idea. I hope it's okay, but I have no idea. My kids do some of the weirdest things, so I have no clue. Like, there, it is totally unexpected behavior every day. So just to pretend like I have any idea, it's irresponsible of me. I have no clue.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, it's, I have a 2-year-old and an 8-month-old, so it's a little different, right? Because they're still good, other than the fact that the terrible twos are very terrible, and those temper tantrums and the swings, the roller coaster of emotion.
Oh, you're just getting started, brother.
Yeah. And it is getting better, but it is very hard. But yes, that is something that my wife and I have talked about being conscientious of. Don't want to say like, oh, you got an A, good job. Like, look, you studied very hard, and look, you got a good grade because of this, you don't want to rely on raw talent. And tying it to sports, right? Like, it's, everyone knows, or if you played sports growing up, or you see, like, everyone knows the player that had the raw talent, but just didn't put any effort, and eventually they get passed up, right? So it's like,
sure.
If, you know, because they relied on that raw talent. So it's like, you don't want your kids to ever rely on the raw talent of anything.
That's sound advice. I think that's very good advice. I had a plan too. My wife and I did. Jess and I, Jess, I think is maybe our first in studio. I guess we had Pork Chop.
And Pork Chop was on here too. So
She did not like it. I don't think Jess will be coming back as an in studio guest in the future, but Jess and I also had a plan. My parents enjoy to raise their voices. You know, they like to yell and they like to argue a little bit, and that's okay. They're great people. But we said, hey, we're not going to yell. We're not going to be yelling parents. And then I had kids that they'll just ignore me until I absolutely lose my shit. So I have to yell. I have no other alternative, because if I don't, it's like I might as well just not even be there. So I get it. I appreciate your plan. I think that is a very good plan, but that 2-year-old will become a 4-year-old, and it only gets worse, man. Like, as soon as they start to walk and talk, it's downhill, and I have no idea how to do it.
Oh, man, this is not scary. This is not helping. Calling my nerves, my anxiety.
Yeah, over the future. We were talking before the show about the Great Reset, and that's another discussion for another day. But folks, I think I got Garrett a little bit spooked about the eventual economic fall of the American dollar. And now here we are telling him that his sweet little daughter is only going to get worse from here.
Now, here's the thing. I'm not spooked, because I can look at the U.S. debt clock. Have you ever seen that website that just shows the ticker of everything? Like, anyone with half a brain could see where the dollar is headed. But this kid's business, man. I don't know how to do it. Although it is like getting better. It is still like, it is like you said, every day. It's just like you wake up in the morning, and then at some point, it's like I'm working most of the day. So it's like, I'm not even with the kids all the time, but my wife is, but it's like, I get done with work and it's like, okay, go play with go play for a little bit. And then it's like, okay, let's start counting down to bedtime, because it's like, I don't know, that makes me sound horrible, because it's like, obviously it's like, okay, that's like my limited time of the day to spend the right. But it's like that last hour when it's like, she's winding down, and it's like, she's getting tired. And then I don't want to go to bed. And then I don't want to eat dinner. And it's like, okay, we have to make you eat dinner. Which one point I was like that when I was like 4, I did the whole, like, I don't want to eat dinner thing and like get up from the table. My parents duct taped me to the kitchen chair and
dinner. Man, like, parents are insane. I remember my parents, I used to snap like a lot, like, and not like a regular snap. Like, if you hold your middle finger and your thumb together, and then you flick your hands and like let your pointer finger just like loose, and it flicks. I used to do that all the time, and it drove my mom nuts to the point that she sent me to school with my hands duct taped into fists so that I couldn't snap that day. Parents are insane. My dad, he got so sick and tired of me once complaining that I was sick. I had a cold. I was like 12. I had a cold. It was very obvious that I had a cold. And he said, well, Jeff, you know how you get rid of that cold? Think about when you play basketball. When you do a lot of running, you have to spit. So the only way that you're going to get rid of all that congestion in your mouth is if you run or jump on the tramp or exercise. So here I am on, like, I have a very serious cold. I felt awful. And in an effort to get me out of the house, my dad recommends to my very, very moldable mind that I need to go jump on the tramp. So I went and jumped on the tramp while I was sick. I about had heat exhaustion. I passed out. All because he just wanted to get me out of the house. Like, parents are insane, but it makes total sense why parents are insane, because kids are nuts. I find myself, when we just went to St. George and we drove. So I had all three kids in a very confined space for, you know, 4.5 hours as I drove down to St. George. And some of the threats that I will make to my children when they are driving me crazy is like, hey, I'm in Panguitch. And I'm starting to pull over on the freeway, telling them that they will walk the remaining 120 miles to St. George. And I'm about to do it. Like, I wasn't going to actually make them walk, but there was a moment of time when, as I was pulling over to threaten, that I thought I was going to do it.
I had to walk like halfway home from church once.
It's insane. When parents are nuts. So to answer the question that was sent into the mailbag, I have no earthly idea. You guys tell us how to instill good habits in children, because my kids are terrible. If you could, like, send them to a kid boot camp, I will send them. I will pay whatever dollar amount to send them away, not even to necessarily learn the habits, but to just have some quiet in my house. If I have to send my kids to boot camp to give myself a few days of peace and quiet, I'll do it. I won't even hesitate. I'll do it right now.
I think you need to drop them off at grandma and grandpa's for a couple of days and see you later.
I think I do. The pandemic, man. Like, we've been stuck in the house for a long time together.
With that, you should also feed your kids. And so we're going to take a break to hear from our sponsor, Hershey High Country Beef. Scott grew up raising cattle. In fact, his grandpa was an immigrant from Switzerland who helped settle the Bear Lake Valley and was one of the first to raise cattle there. Scott grew up learning from his grandpa and dad the ins and outs of raising beef, and it's always been his dream to own his own ranch. Scott found himself immersed in corporate America with his career, but always kept his passion, ranching, on the side as a hobby. He and his wife raised 5 sons and 1 daughter on the ranch. In the past, because ranching was a side hobby, the calves would be sold off to meat suppliers and distributors. But recently, as we've all realized what can happen to disrupted supply chains, the shortage was not due to lack of beef supply. It was an inability to process and transport to consumers. With Hershey High Country Beef, the issue is solved as we eliminate the middleman and provide beef directly to consumers. The SWH Ranch raises grass-fed Angus beef in the mountains of Southeast Idaho in the summer and along the Great Salt Lake in the winter. We are presently reserving whole or half beef and will be ready in the summer. In the future, as they grow their business, they hope to be able to provide on-demand meat options for monthly delivery. These are mountain pasture free range, grass-fed, hormone-free, and animal transport and butcher fees are included in the price. A whole side of beef will cost you anywhere between $2,600 and $3,120, and that'll get you about 400 pounds, and that's about 2/3 of a standalone freezer of 40 cubic feet, and a half side will get run between 1,300 and 1,600 pounds, and a $400 deposit is required for that. So reach out to the Hershey family at HersheyHighCountryBeef.com. That's H-I-R-S-H-I, HighCountryBeef.com. And Jeff, like cows getting murdered.
I ground chicken this week. I used my meat grinder.
You used your meat grinder.
I did.
You made chicken smash burgers?
I did.
There's some ambiguity in that, because it's like a hamburger, but it's not.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was very good. It's different though, right? Like, because I've never cooked a chicken burger with like ground chicken before, like that I ground. And so I didn't really know how it would cook or like how much seasoning was needed. So I kind of just seasoned it like a regular hamburger. So I needed a little bit more seasoning. Like, chicken's a little bit more bland, doesn't have as much natural flavor as a beef patty. So there's some things I'd do differently, but that was really good. And really, this meat grinder has, I think it has made it easy to be healthy, because I can go and I can buy What did I buy at Sam's today? Like 7 pounds, 6.5 pounds of chicken thighs for like $6. And no, a chicken thigh isn't as healthy as a chicken breast, but it's healthier than beef.
It's equal,
or
it's equally as healthy.
Yeah, it's
chicken
fine.
Breast. Fat is so fine. Fat is good for you.
So I had 6.5 pounds of chicken thighs for like $6. I think I paid $6.09. And then ground that up, and I have that much. And I mean, obviously, you lose a little bit because you cut it and have to get rid of some stuff. But I had, you know, probably 5.5 pounds of ground chicken. Like, it makes the diet game completely different. This meat grinder has already paid for itself. Everybody needs a meat grinder.
Which meat grinder? Did you just get the KitchenAid attachment, or is it different?
No, it's a full on meat grinder. I can't remember. It's
did you get on Amazon? Okay, let me go look for a meat grinder. Brands, you know, because yeah. I've also, you know,
so it's not a name brand, it's like a IOC,
right? It's it was like probably like $50 or something like that.
Yeah, 50-60 bucks, something like that.
Okay, maybe I need to get me a meat grinder. But you know,
it brought me to an interesting proposition. I don't know what the word is. So as I was making my chicken smash burgers today, and I thought to myself, hey, look, chicken can become burgers. Chicken, I can do it the same way as ground beef. I thought of stir fry. And I thought to myself, why is stir fry always relegated to being an Asian food? Now, obviously, it has Asian noodles. But why do we always go to like General Tso's sauce? Or I need to have my gochujang or my sriracha sauce or my teriyaki sauce. Why is it always the stir fry always an Asian food? Do you realize how good you could make like barbecue chicken and stir fry noodles and, you know, with barbecue sauce, throw in some like grilled onions and maybe a pepper or something like that. But like some of those natural barbecue type flavors and mix it into a stir fry, how good that would be. Or chicken breast that you coat in like buffalo sauce, throw in, I don't know, celery, carrots, maybe not carrots, but celery that you would get, like if you're getting wings, put it in with some stir fry and then put ranch and blue cheese in it. Why is stir fry only an Asian thing? I think stir fry is way more versatile than what anybody believes.
I mean, I think anything is more versatile, but it's like obviously stir frying. It's like the technique comes from China. So that's like why, but it's, you know, that is something that needs to be expanded, right?
We need to fusion that.
Yes, fusion. I'm going to try that this week, actually. I'm going to
like Greek stir fry would be really good.
In a similar vein, I've actually had this thought before of doing a quesadilla food truck and having different types of quesadillas. Like I've made Greek quesadillas before that had like kind of like a you know, like a gyro type filling, and then with like feta and like mozzarella and spinach and olives.
It'd be delicious.
And then it's, you know, doing your normal thing. I've done Chinese, like I've taken leftover Chinese food and chopped it up and used that as with a quesadilla filling. And so it's, yeah, similar to your stir fry thing. I don't see why, you know, you can, if you mix anything with carbs, it's probably going to taste good, right? Like it's just greasy noodles or rice, whatever, which is going to take on the flavor of what else you put around it. And then it's like, yeah, put on some chicken, like whatever sauce you put on. I do the buffalo chicken with the celery and carrots and like maybe throw some broccoli in there. Broccoli doesn't really taste like much in a stir fry, like a couple, you know, some peppers. And I could get behind that.
It sounds delicious. The spinoff of the Give 'Em Hell, Brigham podcast, the first spinoff, we've had many ideas for many spinoffs, but the first one I think is going to be fusion food, you know, Give 'Em Hell fusion food.
Did you know that this I don't know. I'm going to post a video in the chat. I don't know if you have seen this, but I searched buffalo chicken stir fry and Mr. Sam, the cooking guy has done this.
It's our guy.
Wow, this is the McClintock effect is in full swing here, that we were on the same wavelength with this channel, and it's not even, I didn't even know.
Ladies and gentlemen, is week 4. That makes 4 consecutive episodes that Sam the cooking guy has gotten a shout out from us.
Our favorite Canadian.
Yes, he is our favorite Canadian. And anyway, I'm pumped about it. So that's going to be our first spinoff. I don't know what we're going to call it. I'd like to, you know, give them hell something, but give them hell fusion food, give them fusion food. I don't know. It seems weird, but fusion food's going to be our thing.
Yeah, I can get behind this. And wrapping out the non-sports related things, this is a sports podcast. We are now
and we have 20 a ton minutes of sports content.
We do have, it is fully in the, it is fully off season mode, but we do have lots of sports content. Basketball season is over for the Cougars across the board. We all saw what happened on Saturday when just about everybody besides Alex Barcelo's offensive game was stuck in the airport in Provo, or maybe it was in the elevator along with Jesse Wade. And then the Lady Cougs were up today. They were up with like 2 minutes left. And then
this was my fault.
And then they ended up dropping one
to
the Lady Cats of UA. So yeah,
that one, I think I have to take full responsibility. I tweeted after, so there was back-to-back buckets. Lauren Gustin, it was tied at like 37, tied at 39. Lauren Gustin hit a shot, kind of a crazy shot, if I remember right. And then Shaylee Gonzalez hit a shot. So BYU went up four. And in the women's game, 4 points with 5 minutes to go, kind of feels like a 12-point lead with 3 minutes to go in the men's game.
Like, they played a much more deliberate pace.
Yes.
Like when when your coach was like, pass the ball four times before you shoot. That's kind of what it feels like they're going for.
And there's a lot less, there's fewer ladies out there who can like hit a step back three. Like they have to work the ball inside, and that's fine. So I tweeted out, I said, Lauren and Shaylee are going to get this done for the Lady Cougs. Get to ESPNU now.
Damn it, Jeff.
Almost immediately after I hit tweet, Arizona did hit back-to-back threes, went up two, and never looked back. So I have to take full responsibility. I take zero responsibility for the men. That was just trash. And I was in a sports book in Mesquite, and there were many, 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 many upset bettors on Saturday night because a lot of people put their trust in BYU, and BYU let them down. I made a friend at the sports book. His name was Abe. Great, great guy. Really great guy. And I watched him. He had won a bunch of money. He hit on it was a wonderful day for him. He hit on a seven leg and then a six leg parlay. Like that's pretty friggin' amazing.
That was a good day for Mr. Abe.
So he had several thousand dollars to spare. And he thought, okay, I'm not going to bet at all. But he was so sure that BYU was going to win that he took about 80% of his winnings. And I watched him put like, I think it was like $7,000, $8,000 on the Cougs. And when the Cougs came out as flat as they did, well, I don't think we're going to make him a BYU fan anytime soon.
That is really unfortunate and a missed opportunity.
It was just bad. It was bad. And it was really hard, and it really kind of exposed what I think we all thought of this BYU team all year long, that, I mean, we usually don't like to belittle players, but I'm going to maybe belittle a little bit here. Matt Harms is not good enough as an offensive player to be successful at the next level for sure. But he struggled immensely, even at the college level. Like he would disappear offensively. Great defender. But what Matt Painter said about him being beaten out at Purdue, and that's probably why he's transferring, not whatever it was that Harms said, that was a little bit of a jilted lover, right? Like that was Matt Painter being upset. But after seeing Matt Harms go up against some of these games in the last, 10 or so games as the season wound down, it became very, very clear that his offensive game was just not strong enough. Like you would see Mark Pope turn to Richard Harward a lot when BYU needed a bucket because Harms wasn't going to get it done.
And Harward has a much better offense, definitely much better offensive. I mean, he's not nearly as good defensively, but his offensive game is a lot more polished. And even offensively, like getting offensive rebounds, Harms just like disappeared.
He just disappeared. Like, and I think it's because he's so small.
He gets rebounds and he's like catching them like underhand at his stomach. He's like, dude, you're the tallest guy out there. Get your arms up and grab that thing off the board. It's like,
I think I'm going to say the four-letter word that no athlete ever wants to hear. What is, I want you to guess this word, Garrett. The four-letter word that you as an athlete never want to be called.
What does it start with?
S. Soft.
Yes, I was going to say, I was thinking W, saying he's a wuss, which is similar.
Same idea. He was just soft. And BYU doesn't have the ball handlers. They have Barcelo and Averett, who played lights out. Like, they played as good as you could really hope for. I think, what did Barcelo with? He ended up with north of 20 points, if I remember right. And Averett was easily the...
He was like 12, and he was the second leading scorer. But, even still, it's UCLA... I think UCLA was probably a little underseeded as an 11 seed. Like, looking at KenPom right now, they are number 22. And that's obviously, they've gone on to the Sweet 16, so they bumped up a bit. They've gone up actually like quite a bit, but UCLA is not, they were not bad.
No,
right? But it was still...
They were long and they were athletic, and that's just what BYU does not have.
And it just needed somebody besides, like, Averett came on a little bit late, but it was just needed somebody
besides Barcelo
to get going. Yep. And Lohner could not get going. Like,
he
could not get going. And it just, we needed another solid score to take some of the pressure off. And it wasn't, but I was very impressed with Alex Barcelo, and I really hope he comes back, because I think that if Barcelo, now that he feels very cut, like last year, obviously he was not the guy because he was the newcomer. There was obviously Tyler Hawes, there was
Yoli, four other guys,
Toulson. Like, there were a lot of guys who could score points, and Barcelo was the new guy. And at the beginning of this year, he kind of, was kind of timid. Like, he kind of fired his, like, hey, are you going to be the guy? But then it came into where, he was an AP honorable mention All-American, and he, was all conference player and did very, very well. And he kind of faded in that Pepperdine game, but then came back on strong in the second half, and he came out ready and gunning against UCLA. And I think that Alex Barcelo, if he comes back with the attitude of I'm going to be the guy from the get-go, I think he can be an absolute, like, superstar in the WCC next year. And probably, in terms of scoring, like, he may have, is potentially able to have one of, like, the most dominant seasons of any BYU player in the last decade. I think he is primed to, if he wants to come back and do that.
I think so. And from what we've heard, it sounds more likely that he comes back than he doesn't. Harms and Averett have both announced that they will be moving on, which isn't a surprise to anybody. I think that this game against UCLA, and really the game against Gonzaga, especially in the second half last week, I guess 2 weeks ago now, really exposed BYU's lack of athletic length. And that became just a huge problem. The guard game wasn't bad, right? Barcelo and Averett played well, and BYU had certainly size on the inside, but the college game, unless you're a Yoli Childs, right? Unless you're a Eric Mika, a dominant big man, like, with offensive skill that can go and get a bucket whenever you need one, you can't really work inside out anymore. Everybody's too big, too athletic, too strong. And it felt like that became a very apparent issue. BYU would try to work inside out, with a true old-fashioned back, like, post-up game, right? Like, with their back to the basket. Harms was trying to get post-up buckets. He was getting pushed around, and that just isn't going to work. I look at guys like Caleb Lohner, and to me, he's the key next year. Like, Caleb Lohner,
he needs to make that step.
He does. He needs to make that step, figure out how to be a number one option on offense, because he has all the tools to do it. But also, Mark Pope has to figure out how to use him. I don't love Caleb Lohner constantly playing on the block. Like, Caleb Lohner has elite athleticism. You've got to figure out a way to capitalize on that athleticism, that, hey, he can stretch. And this is obviously, it's a two-way street. Lohner has to do his part as well. But he has the shot that he could stretch the defense. He has good enough handles that he can create his own bucket if he has to. But if we're going to relegate him to the block, it's going to be really hard for Caleb Lohner to be Caleb Lohner. So Pope has to figure out a way to utilize him more. And Lohner has to take a step forward in order to capitalize on that just endless amount of raw talent that he has.
And Connor Harding needs to remember how to shoot the football, shoot the basketball. Right?
Shoot
and,
the football. I mean, like it almost shooting footballs, man.
Right. Like, and it's, that is something where I think that's probably the biggest, that's probably the single biggest disappointment, other than obviously not knowing like what having Gavin Baxter as an extra defensive player. But Harding not taking, and I think that's kind of what everyone expected this season. Like everyone expected, you know, we're talking about Caleb Lohner taking that step forward, you know, and having like where Yoli went from like 9.5 to 18 and change points a game, his freshman to sophomore year. We're talking about Caleb Lohner needs to take that step. And I think everyone expected Connor Harding to take that step in the backcourt and be this like long guard who could score a bunch of points. And you're seeing, and it was just not good.
Just wasn't there. Chalk that one up to another symptom of the marriage curse. You get married and your game drops a little bit. It happens in football as well, but it didn't happen to his wife. His wife is a stud. She played tonight. Paisley Harding played tonight's game with a broken hand. She's incredible. Also, she did is. You see the clip of her taking a charge? Did you see this on the internet?
The one from last year where she took a charge and then just slid and like rolled backwards and jumped back on her feet.
Back handspring little thing. Yeah, it's incredible. So she's amazing. Connor needs to get some of the same swagger that Paisley has, because yeah, Paisley has some swagger. Like she's the most animated. She's the most like intense player on the court for the Lady Cougs. And Connor kind of faded away a little bit.
Yeah,
for the,
I mean,
for the
last year,
team.
Last year was just under 52, shooting 52% from the field, 44% from three, and that dropped to 40% and 32%.
Yeah, that was a big drop. And he just kind of disappeared. He fell out of the rotation quite a bit towards the end of the year. So obviously, a lot of things to work on. It'll be interesting to see what Pope does with this roster. There is a scholarship crunch, kind of like the football team. But I believe we will see some transfers out. We already saw Jesse Wade. He has entered the transfer portal. So he went from elevator shaft to transfer portal without seeing the court, which is a little bit of a bummer, but that's what happened.
Well, and that's what happened. And he said that he met, so I think they had their exit interview, they had their exit interview, and he said, you know, that they were looking at going to other schools, including the possibility of coming back to BYU, which honestly completely makes sense. He is a talented player who had his career derailed by injuries, but he was a walk-on this year. So I think it's great. And it honestly helps build the locker room and the ability, if, you know, you can walk in and have coach, and it's like, I mean, he knows he wasn't on scholarship this year. If Pub was like, look, we're not going to have a scholarship again for you next year. And they already had that hard conversation once. He's like, look, you know where you stand here. We want you back, yeah, but you should put your name in the portal and see if you can get school paid for and see what's out there. And maybe he goes to UVU or something and like goes and plays his final year, whatever. But I hope, you know, or maybe he comes back, because it's, I mean, he's already in school. He doesn't, you know, it's not necessarily he's gone. He just put his name in the portal to see if he can get school paid for, because currently he and his, like his family is, you know, he's paying for that. But I mean, it's really sad with how much promise he had coming out of high school, signing with Gonzaga, going on his mission. Now it's like, you know, didn't play in any games his first year on campus. He like after his mission sat out, then he got hurt last year and didn't play at all. And then now this year, like he played in 9 games the whole season.
Mm-hmm. And great player, had his run with injuries. It's a bummer. But it is interesting. I think UVU, you mentioned UVU. If BYU wanted to trade Jesse Wade for Jamison Overton, I think that would be okay. Jamison Overton, I think he was the leading scorer for UVU this past year. He ended up signing with Mark Madsen, but Mark Pope recruited him. 6'6" guard, athletic, like he gives BYU a scoring punch, has length. Like he's kind of what was missing. He's the Juzang. Well, I can't even remember his first name for UCLA, the Johnny Juzang that just killed BYU. He's built a lot like Johnny Juzang. BYU needs a Johnny Juzang.
I mean, is Juzang available? Can we take him?
let's just get Johnny Juzang. I mean, that's
been... it's kind of feel bad for UVU that they've kind of become this pipeline, right? Of like guys coming. And I mean, that will probably taper off now because, you know, Pope is far enough removed that he's not taking his guys anymore. But really, if it's like, you know, they want to, if guys want to play in a bigger program and get more in the spotlight without having to move, then I think, you know, it would be great. And just, similar to what we talked about, how BYU Idaho should start sports again and join the Big Sky. And then anyone who's all conference, you get a transfer. If you are an all conference WAC player in the, at UVU in basketball or baseball, welcome grad transfer. Let's do it. Like, happy to take you.
Especially as a grad transfer, you've only got to follow that honor code 4 months. So, yeah. Come on down the road, folks. Speaking of transfers, we did get asked a question. When will BYU make the announcements of Puka Nacua, Samson Nacua, and
Jacob Robinson?
Jacob Robinson. I almost said Nate Robinson, but no, he's not the same guy. Jacob Robinson. When will BYU make those official? Not until they enroll in school. They have signed whatever scholarship agreement or whatever they have, but because of initials and the way that the NCAA does things to prevent oversigning, it will be when they enroll in school. So
was that the same for 2 years ago? Because I remember Emmanuel Supka and Tyson Williams like both getting announced sooner than that. Was that because they were grad transfer and so it's a little different as a
yep. Well, and BYU had the initials available. But this year, because of how many kids gray shirted last year and because of how many missionaries are coming into the program and the six or so, I think there's six signees who are playing right away, plus the number of walk-ons that got a scholarship, BYU's just out of initials, I think, right now. And so they've got to wait until school starts so that they can technically count those towards the next class or something
like that. Right. So it's really stuff. It's stupid. It's not even just like when the kid will start or when they will first enroll. It's like they cannot, like, you can only have so many people sign the paper before this deadline. And so it's like they can't sign the paper now because they need someone to graduate in April, so that way it frees up a scholarship even though they are already replacing each other. And it's like the way it's really stupid and complicated. I don't think anybody understands it, how it works with initials and whatever. But speaking also of football, there was a new commit tonight, Jaron Kalama out of Wasatch High School up in Heber. I don't even know what does 24 list him. They should list him as an athlete. I don't know if he's listed as an athlete or not, but he's like 6'3", 200 pounds. He is very,
he's listed at.
Long, he plays some offense, he plays defense, like he can be a safety, he can play a receiver and kind of the taller, you know, body kind of like a Neil Powell type, or he could be a safety. He has the frame that he could put on 35 pounds and become an outside linebacker. He could put on 50 pounds and become 60 pounds and become a smaller tweener defensive end. He could he really could play a number of positions. And so even though he's not super highly recruited, right? Like he doesn't have a composite score because 24/7 is the only site that has watched his film and graded him so far. He's kind of like a prospect, but he is a good athlete that can fit a variety of positions. And that's really,
he is a less refined version of Chaz Ayu. Like that's who he is. When you watch him play, he's that same kind of fluid athleticism, but he's just raw as a football player. Chaz was like developed, ready to play college football on day one. Jaron Kalama is not going to be ready to play college football on day one. But when you watch the way that they move on the football field, Jaron Kalama and Chaz Ayu have a ton of similarities. BYU likes this kid a lot. And, you know, offer list be damned, BYU really, really likes him. Story about Jaron Kalama, he received an offer from FESI, presumably to play offense. From what I've been told, the defensive staff had planned on meeting with Jaron the next day or calling Jaron the next day and extending an offer to play defense when FESI beat them to the punch and extend an offer to play offense. Like both sides of the ball wanted this kid. And so he's coming to BYU as an athlete. And it really is a blank canvas, I think, for BYU, because he's 6'3", 200 pounds. He's got those Polynesian genes where maybe he stays 6'3", 200 pounds. And, you know, he's kind of a Kai Nakua type. He could very easily go from 6'3 to 250 to 260 and end up on the defensive end. I mean, he could go in a lot of different directions. It's going to be interesting to see. I think you're going to see a lot of this from BYU. I had a conversation with some folks today who really understand the BYU scholarship situation. BYU could not sign anybody. Zero. And still be right at, if not over, the scholarship limit, depending on what time kids come home from missions. Like, that's how tight the numbers are right now. And so,
and that's how tight they're going to be for the next 3 or 4 years because
for a while. Yeah. And it sucks, but that's just nature of the beast. So with that said, BYU is not going to sign zero, right? They're still going to go out and get some players to help plug into the roster and put into the pipeline. But I think BYU signed 16 players last year. I would be surprised if they signed 16 this year. I've thought between 13 and 17. I think it's probably less than that. I think BYU could legitimately have a class this year where they signed 10. And what's crazy, and this is a different conversation for another episode, I think there's a lot of schools that are in that same situation. Like Utah this year, I think Utah could probably only sign 15 or 16 guys. Like there's a lot of schools that are really tight with numbers right now. So there's going to be some really good players that would normally end up as like player number 22 at USC that fall down to Utah or fall down to BYU. Like it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. There's going to be some G5 schools who get some very, very good players. But having said all of that, because BYU scholarship situation is so tight, I think you're going to see them prioritize players like Kalama in that they can play multiple positions. BYU does not know what the roster needs are going to be in 2024, 2025, if Kalama goes on a mission. But they know that Kalama could potentially fill one of five different positions. Well, they don't have the scholarship capital to go out and sign a safety and a linebacker and a defensive end and a wide receiver. But if they could sign one guy who could potentially do all of those and then add him to the program later and plug him in where it fits best, I think that's going to be priorities 1, 2, and 3 this year for BYU on the recruiting trail.
Yeah. And even on the recruiting trail, and this is something like we saw yesterday that Carson Gay out of American Fork High School, formerly of Temple.
Carson Gay
committed to Virginia. But the, you know, Carson Ryan, and, you know, I think that was another thing where BYU was upfront with him and saying, look, you do not project you as a tight end at the next level. We project you, you know, you're either going to be a blocking tight end or you're going to be, you know, an offensive lineman, and you're probably going to be a guard. And I don't, maybe he just didn't want to hear that, whatever. And that's a little similar thing. We've kind of talked this before about like how offers come and go, because a year ago, Carson Ryan, like he was blowing up, right? Like he was get offers from Tennessee and it was like, oh my gosh, we're going to get this kid's going to from Tempview is like loving BYU over these big name SEC schools, whatever. He went to UCLA. Right. Like, it's not like, I mean, UCLA, like, obviously, yes, like there is the allure of UCLA as a top 20 university in the country. And if my kid got into UCLA and could go to UCLA for free, I would very much not be upset about that at all. but with Norris Ryan, it's like, you know, in terms of football right now, it's like UCLA is pretty, man, like it's just kind of there. Like, it doesn't really excite you the way other schools would, you know? And so it's like with, you know, Ryan, it's, you know, that he is very niched of, okay, you're looking at maybe, you know, not a bunch of defensive positions, which is where defense is a lot more just like, do you have the explosiveness and aggression? And as long as your body fits in the position, like it's fine. Whereas offense is a lot more like technically, you know, where you're saying, okay, you catch a lot of passes now, but really you're going to be a big Daniel Coates or Joe Tukuafu type tight end. And then we're going to move you to center or guard. And then it's like, we already have a lot of linemen. We already have a lot of tight ends. Like, it's not like he's not, he's a great player, and obviously he had a lot of offers and he's going to go play in the Pac-12. Like, but in terms of the needs, getting a body type like Carson Ryan in the program is very down on the list of, yes, a blocking tight end who we don't even going to, like, if you're going to get someone who you project as you can be an interior offensive lineman, just go recruit an interior offensive lineman, sure. Right? Like, who's been doing it? Because it's not, he can play, you project him to being a different position, but then that one position you project him is like, it's only one position. So go find someone. It's not like a, you know, Kalama where it's, you, we just ran off, like he could play four or five different spots depending on what his body does.
Yeah, I like Carson Ryan a lot, and I hope he does extremely well at UCLA. But you're right. I mean, I think if BYU had 20 scholarships to play with in this class, they probably really prioritize Carson Ryan. They probably make him one of the guys that they get after the hardest. But with only 10, whether he's a tight end, whether he's an offensive lineman, neither one of those are like glaring positions of need for BYU in the future. So he was a nice to have. He would have been a really nice to have. Like, I think everybody would love to have him, but it's a nice to have. It's not an imperative need. And when you only have potentially 10 scholarships, like, you really have to make some tough decisions. Like, you're going to have to say no to some players that it's not going to be a popular decision among fans who are going to look at recruiting rankings and say, what the hell, you know? Right. So tough decisions. Best of luck to Carson Ryan at UCLA. Best of luck to Jaren Kalama at BYU. I'm excited about him. I think that this is the start of a, we'll call it a small barrage of commitments. I think that there's probably two or three other names here in the next couple of weeks that I would pay attention to. Micah Wilson is an obvious one, right? The brother of Zach Wilson and Josh Wilson, pay attention to him. There's a few other in-state guys as well that I think could pull the trigger soon.
See, Micah's the other linebacker, right?
The other linebacker. Yeah, two linebackers, Isaac two is the quarterback. Correct. And Isaac is for real. I have been hearing about Isaac Wilson for like a year. He was an eighth grader when I first started hearing, and people started to say, that dude's got zip on the ball. Like, and you watch his highlights, he looks like Zach. Like, Isaac Wilson is going to be a stud.
And is he going to start at Corner Canyon this year? Because they got another, just a freshman. Right.
He's going to be a freshman, and then they've got going to be a sophomore. Yeah. And they've got the Patterson kid. I think his first name is Drew Patterson out of Farmington, transferred up to Corner Canyon, who can also sling it. So it's going to be a pretty interesting battle to watch at Corner Canyon this year between those two at the quarterback spot. Either one of them, I think, would end up on BYU's radar at one point. I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. Isaac Wilson is for real though. So I know that. Right. I know that Isaac Wilson long term. I love Drew Patterson, and I think BYU would do well to bring him in. He's got an arm. Isaac Wilson projects as a power five caliber starting quarterback, just like his brother. So you go and you get that guy.
Yeah.
Spring ball's wrapping up. This week is the final week of spring ball, and it is the most unceremonious ending of spring ball ever. People have asked me on our VIP chats and other things, like, why is there no spring ball info? Folks, let me tell you why. Because COVID-19 is still a thing, and the media has not seen anything. Fans have not seen anything.
Like, they are on Zoom. The media is on, if you haven't listened to anything, like, the media is on Zoom, and there's, like, someone there moderating it. Yeah. And they're like, okay, Mitch Harper, you can ask your question now. And then it's like super muffled because it's like, yep, they have cameras pointed at whoever the coach or player is who are sitting behind the normal like press, you know, media availability thing with a mic in front of them. But then it's like the sound coming out of a computer speaker. So it's like, oh yes, Kalani. Can we, who looked good in the quarterback room today? And then it's like, yes, well, you know, we're evaluating everyone and we're trying to, it's an open competition and we're going to see how things play out throughout the summer. You know, we're really blessed to have four quality guys, you know, Baylor, Saljay, Jaren,
This is well done.
Jacob Conover, he's like, you know, they can all sling it really well. And, you know, if they weren't good quarterbacks, we didn't think they'd be quarterbacks, we wouldn't bring them here. And we wouldn't, you know, we brought them here because we think they can play. And so, you know, we're just going to keep the competition going and see what happens throughout the summer. And as we get closer to our season opener, then we'll make a decision then. And then it's on in the next thing.
That's all that it is. Think about this, though, right? Like, just think of journalism at large, right? Journalism is as a profession. If you are a journalist who covers the White House, you go to the border and you see what you can see. And then you go back to the White House and you say, hey, Mr. President, let me ask you about what I saw at the border. Right? I mean, that's how it works. Or you have your counterpart who's at the border and tells you what they saw and say, hey, go ask this, right? Like, but you're confirming something that you or one of your colleagues saw, and you're getting their opinion based on what was seen. Well, with nobody being able to see spring practices, there is no confirmation. There is no clarification of what you saw. The only questions that anybody can ask is, how do you feel? Who looks good out there? What stands out to you? Like, you're asking the fluffiest questions that have ever been fluffed, and there's not a damn thing anybody can do about it.
You can't put someone on the spot. You can't say, hey, we noticed that Sione Finau wasn't practicing today. Is his knee bothering him again?
Right.
Like, you can't put him on the spot. It's just like, you know, is anyone injured? Oh, you know, we got normal bumps and bruises, but, you know, we should be nothing major. We should be fine by the end of the season. Ready, ready to go by the season opener.
Kalani's the king. Hey, Kalani, who stood out to you at practice? Well, you know, I really don't want to single anybody out because I'll just forget somebody. I mean, we're really impressed with the whole practice at large. Like, everybody's playing well. We're playing hard. We're getting better every day. That's really our goal. Like, these are non-answers. And I feel bad. Like, while we produce content over on Cougar Sports Insider, we're able to go interview recruits, try to get some information that way. I feel bad for the journalists who are required to come up with, like, to take those press conferences and come up with an article. There was one on Josh Wilson in the Deseret News, and it was a well-written article. It was fine, but it was just like, I felt bad for Jay Drew having to read it, because it was like, I know exactly what Josh said. Like, no matter how well written this is, I watched the 7-minute clip on YouTube. I saw every question. I heard every answer. I don't need this article. And Jay had to come up with 1,000 words by, you know, a certain deadline to get it into his article for that day, or his editor would have freaked out. But it's like, this is the most pointless article in the world, because BYU is producing the press conference. You can't ask Josh about anything other than, like, hey, how did you feel out there? Because you didn't see him play. Like, I just felt bad. And pick a player. Josh is the one that I read yesterday, and I had this thought process in my head. But pick a player. Pick an interview. Pick an article. Like, it's all just fluffity fluff, fluff, fluff. So I have a question here on our agenda. What did we learn from spring ball? I learned
absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
And who is our QB? I still think, I say that if the game against Arizona was tomorrow, it would be Jaren Hall based on his experience in the program. But given a full summer of PRPs and 2 weeks of camp and then 2 weeks of game prep, it's still anybody's game. But if you really want to read between the lines in the clips that have been put out there, it seems like Jaren is throwing to the ones more than Jacob Conover is, but that's also just, that's just based on that. Like, it's,
oh, yeah.
You know, that's just based on what they happen to put in there. Like, we don't know anything.
We know nothing. I had one person today who is, and players are very good at not giving away things either. Like, they're very well coached in how to address the media and the media. A lot of people don't know this. It's like, it's very frowned upon at BYU. Like, they'll pull credentials if you just go rogue and ask a player something. Like, I cover recruiting, right? Like, I have the phone numbers of very, very many BYU players that I could just probably text them, and I have a relationship, and some might answer me with great detail. Some might ignore me completely, but I could do it. That's grounds to get on BYU's blacklist. Like, a lot of reporters could do that, but BYU will not allow it, right? So there's just not a whole lot of information from anybody. I was told today from somebody who has a parent. I'll say that. A parent of a player who, I don't even know if he's a player at BYU now that I think about it. He's a parent of, I guess he was a coach at a high school who now has players at BYU. He's a parent of a recruit that I've covered, but that recruit didn't go to BYU. But long story, this is just somebody who has got a connection to the team. And that player who is on the team, I don't even know who the players are, said, yeah, it seems like Jaren and Baylor are ahead of Jacob right now. Like, that's the only nugget of information that I have. I can't even explain where it came from. So take it for what it's worth. But that's how locked down things are right now.
And it's, I mean, really, if anybody was going to be able to tell you something, it would probably be the video crew, but they're not going to say anything because they'd get fired. Right? Like, as if they say they want it locked down, then you do what you're told, because you literally get paid to film football games and practices and edit it. And that is an awesome job, and you're not going to screw that up. Right? Like, it's, you're not going to rock the boat with that too much. So we learned nothing. Who's our QB? I don't know. It could be, honestly, like, it could be any of the three, and I'm fine with it, right? Like, it's, I'm not. And Fessy and A-Rod have both proven that working together, it's like, you know, look at any quarterback that has played under Roderick, you know, only so much you could do with Tanner Mangum, but he made Tanner Mangum look serviceable for half a season. But like, you know, it's the, you know, when you look at that and look at how, you know, Zach Wilson progressed, you looked at how Jaren Hall played, you look at how well Baylor was prepared for, you know, his two starts that he's had. And it's not, you know, like, either way, it's like the best guy is going to play and it's going to be fine. Like, are they going to be Zach Wilson? No. Is the offense going to miss a beat? Probably not, because it's going to be a little less than leaning on the quarterback. And we're going to see a little bigger dose of Ropati and Algier and Finau as the 300, you know, monster coming out of the backfield, and that's going to carry more of the load because it's a first year starter, but it's going to be fine.
I'm more excited for Pro Day than I am anything to do with spring ball, just because at least Pro Day we'll get to see something, right? Like, spring ball has just been an absolute bust. Like, normally you get excited about it, but there's nothing to be excited about. Like, I don't care about the little interviews that we get to see. Like, it's just, it's all meaningless. We've learned nothing. So Pro Day is going to be fun. And I want to, because people are going to tune in, they're going to see it.
It will be on both BYU TV and NFL Network on Friday morning, if you have not heard yet.
I want to just kind of go through the 8 primary players who are going to be there. So NFL.com released their 2021 player projections, and they took all of the guys who they are predicting will end up on a roster or have a shot at ending up on a roster, and they graded them. The 8 players were Zach Wilson, Dax Milne, Kyrus Tonga, Brady Christensen, Chandon Herring, Tristan Hodge, Chris Wilcox, Matt Bushman. All 8 of them, based on these projections, were projected to at least get a shot at making a scout team or the back end of a roster, right? So focusing on just those 8 players, what is the one thing each of those 8 players have to do on Friday during Pro Day to secure a roster spot, whether that be as a late round draft pick or a high priority undrafted free agent? What do they have to do to secure their shot? What do they have to show on Pro Day? So let's start with Zach, and I'm going to start on this one because the answer is easy. What does Zach do to have to secure his status in the draft? Absolutely nothing is what he has to do, period. He'll throw and he'll go out and he'll do his thing, and great. He's going to wow people. Like, Zach Wilson, his arm talent is unbelievable. And if the film that you see of him doing it in games isn't impressive enough, watch him in shorts, because he's even more impressive. People forget Mitch Harper. I'm going to give Mitch credit, although I think I was on the Zach Wilson train before Mitch because I saw him a lot at Corner Canyon. But I'll give Mitch Harper credit for being the first. Once he got to BYU, it was one day of Zach Wilson as a true freshman, first day of fall camp, that Mitch sent us a text and proclaimed Zach Wilson the quarterback of the future.
I could go dig it up. And even I remember even that first day, maybe I wasn't even in the spring, a clip, but I remember like it was that first day, just the ball exploding out of his hand. I remember I'd have to go to, it was just like, start the kid. It was like, that's what I said. Yeah. Like, it did not matter. It was based on a single throw. It was like, yeah. I knew. Like, you could just tell.
His arm talent is unbelievable. His arm talent in practice, when there's not people coming to kill him and he doesn't have to worry about like wandering around to escape pressure, is absolutely spectacular. He's going to put on a show on Friday. So what does he have to do on Friday? Nothing. Like, he's going to be a top pick and he's going to do well. He has to do nothing. What do you think Zach has to do? Like, if he shows up and has two arms, I think he gets drafted. If he shows up and one of his arms has fallen off, then I do think he's going to have a struggle.
Are we saying, oh, to get drafted, not...
Well, just to whatever.
Okay.
To get drafted, to secure his status, right?
Yeah, like, to secure his status. I mean, I don't think he needs to do any... Well, he needs to basically just not be horrible. Like, if he shows up and was like ran like a 5.2 and could only do three reps, like basically abysmal across the board, doesn't matter. He basically needs to show up and put in okay performance for everything and it's done deal. He doesn't
need he's not even gonna run. He already announced that. Like, he won't run the 40 because he doesn't have to. Like, he doesn't have to do anything. He's gonna throw just to I think he's gonna throw more for the scouts of the teams who are good that might trade up. I think the Jets have made their mind up. They're either going to trade the pick or pick Zach. And so, like, they're not going to.
Although it was reported that Corey Davis signed with the Jets under the assurance that they told him Sam Darnold was going to be the quarterback.
Oh, well, by all means. Me, as a Zach Wilson fan who doesn't care about the Jets at all, yes, 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 yes.
I mean, yeah, they need to, they should. Really, they should trade down is what they need to do.
They should do that. All right, moving on. Dax Milne. What is the one thing Dax has to do in order to, I mean, what's his status? He's a fringe draft guy, right? So what does Dax have to do on Friday to secure a draft pick?
I think he needs to probably either run a 40 in the 4.4s or a shuttle in the 4.2s. He needs to run a 4.49. So basically get into the 4.4s. And I think I agree with that. It needs to be one of those, like one of the speed things. Cause like the bench, no one cares about the bench for a wide receiver. If he's some, and we know he can't jump, right? I mean, he's going to have some run of the mill. Like, you know, he's going to have like a 33 or 34 inch vertical, whatever. He's not going to do anything, but it's basically he needs one standout thing. And that was this similar to, I feel like he's very similar to Daniel Sorensen, who when his pro day, or even did, I don't remember, may have been at the combine.
It was the combine that he was off the charts.
It was his three cone drill was like insane, like NFL record at like, and not his 40 was meh. Everything else was meh, but it was, he had one, like the quickness, and it is either the shuttle or the three cone. He dominated, and it's like he needs one very above average number.
Yep. I agree. And I think it comes in the 40. I think that's going to be the biggest question. His quickness, I think, shows up on tape. His speed does not. And so I think he's got to get into the 4.4s. That's my, you know, and even low 4.5s, I guess. Like if he's a 4.51, 4.52, I think that's probably okay. If he gets into the 4.4s, he's getting drafted. Like that, I'm very confident in that. Next one, Kyrus Tonga. I like what you've put here. What is the one thing Kyrus Tonga, who's kind of similar to Dax in that fringe draft guy hoping to secure a pick and, you know, Rowan's a day three pick. What is the one thing he has to do? He has to show up with his weight under 315 pounds, which I think is very, very good. I went a different route. He needs to absolutely ball out on the bench. And I put 31 reps, which would have put him in like the top six or seven of defensive tackles in the 2019 combine. Remember, there wasn't one last year. No, or was there?
I think it was all virtual stuff.
Yeah, it was something funny because of COVID. So 2019 is what I looked at. That would have put him in the top six or seven. I think he has to show his strength, his quickness. He has elite hands, and it really shows on tape that he is quick with his hand. He's quick off the line. He will beat offensive linemen to the spot more often than not. Where he gets in trouble is, one, his shape, right? But I think that's what you're getting at here with his weight. He's got to show up under 315. And two, his strength. As big and strong as he is, there are times that because he's out of shape or whatever it is, he gets pushed around a little bit. And if he can show that, one, he is as strong as anybody in the draft, or that he is as in shape as he has ever been in, then I think Kyrus Tonga ends up getting drafted. I am maybe higher on Kyrus's draft status than I am anybody not named Zach or Brady. I think that Kyrus, he's just such an animal, and people are going to pull that USC tape up from a couple of years ago and watch him just obliterate USC offensive linemen play after play after play after play. Kyrus Tonga is going to get drafted. I'm very confident in that. But if he shows up and he's only able to put up 23 reps on the bench, then no, he's not. Or if he shows up and he's 340, it's not going to happen.
Right. He needs to show up. And that's why the reason I kind of honed in on the weight is because I think if the weight for him, if the weight is under control, everything else is going to be fine. If he gets his weight down, he's going to run faster than people thought he did. He's going to have cut that weight by, you know, moving iron, and he's going to do fine. And, you know, he's going to do fine in the bench, and everything else will be okay. And so I think with him, it definitely is. I think it's the weight is the big thing of just, you know, do you have the drive? Like, did you put in the effort when it's, you know, there? And because I think that's always been the big question mark with him. Next up, Brady Christensen, who I think is also maybe, I think Brady Christensen is probably also in the not, doesn't have to do anything camp, similar to Zach Wilson. I mean, if he shows up and does horribly, right? Like if he shows up and he's like, I can only bench, you know, like 15 times, then that's going to be a problem. Which actually, let's see, in the 2019 draft, the worst offensive lineman, you know, there was this tackle from San Diego State who ran a 5.240 and did 18 reps. Like if Christensen does that, he ain't getting drafted. But I think you have that he needs to hit 27 reps. I think that is true. I think he needs to be in, I think he needs to be in like, if he's in like the four, if he's in like the four fives on the shuttle, then that would do really, really well for him. If he can show like he's got quick feet.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The biggest question that I have for Brady going into the draft, I'm curious where NFL teams have him picked, if they have him at tackle or if they have him as an inside guy. And either way is great, right? Like he has the athleticism to play tackle, and I don't know if he has the quickness, and so that's where you're coming in with the shuttle. Can he show that he has the quickness to hang with very quick speed rush hands? And I just don't know if he has that. But if he can show that he has the strength to be a tackle, right? 27 reps, 28 reps, that puts him in the upper echelon of tackles. But that also puts him in the, hey, you could very easily be a guard strength. Like that shows that he's strong enough to be a guard. And I in my mind, what is going to secure his status as a day two guy instead of a day three guy is his versatility. If he shows the NFL scouts that he can play either position, just get me on the roster, I'll do either one. That's what he's got to show. And so to me, strength is the one metric that shows that better than anything else. But I'm with you. I mean, pick one, right? Whether it's his agility or whether it's his strength, he's got to show his athleticism that he has the ability to play multiple positions along the offensive line. Chandon Herring has long been our dark horse pick to be drafted that nobody's talking about. And I am still standing by that. I think he goes in day three because he's such a freak athlete. You have a sub five. I'm assuming that's a sub 5.40.
Yeah. Which honestly, he could turn it as in the 4.8s even. And I wouldn't be surprised.
And I think your thought process is probably exactly where I'm at. I said a 30 inch vert, just something that shows off how freaky that dude is. Like he's a freaky athlete. So pick something. He's going to test incredibly well for an offensive lineman in just about everything except for maybe the bench. He's freaky strong, but he's got mega long arms, so I don't know if he's going to be able to put up a ton of reps,
right?
Because his arms are very, very long, and that's going to be tough to do. The guy's freaky.
Next, with Bo Hodge, you have 32 reps, so he just needs to show again that he is, that he is quick, or not quick, that he is strong. And I think he needs to. Well, I think he needs to have a 30-inch vertical. So this is what you put for Herring. So similar, I think he needs to show that just he can have the explosion because he's battled injuries, with his foot, his ankle, his knee. He did have a shoulder problem. So I guess either one of those, be showing that he is, that he has the explosion and his body can, handle. Because obviously he's been prepping for the draft. It's grueling, a lot of physical work to put it in. It's like, can you, kind of show up and perform?
I wish Tristan Hodge had tape as a center.
Yeah, I don't think I think it may even need to be higher than like 32. It may need to be like 35 blown away. This would have been the top performance at the combine. Good, because I don't think Tristan Hodge is going to get drafted, and there's no way it's very similar. Even if you look at even if you look at Taysom Hill's pro day, right? Like Taysom Hill ran like a 4.44, and then he had a 38 and a half vertical and a 4.3 in the shuttle. Like Taysom was incredible, but because of his injury and the lack of like great tape, he still didn't get drafted because there was concerns about his health. And I think Tristan Hodge, no matter what he does, is going to fall into the same boat.
Yeah. I have to agree with that. Unfortunately, that's why I say, I wish that he had tape, as a center snapping the ball, because I think he has the IQ and he has the strength, if he's healthy, to be a very good offensive lineman. And I wish that to me, he looks like an NFL center more than an NFL guard. NFL guards, man, like they're just huge, huge people. And Tristan's huge, like Tristan, and he looks great. Like he's put in a ton of work. He looks great going into pro day. But I wish that he could be a center. I think he'd have the best chance of being drafted as a center, but I agree with you. As it is, he's going to have to probably make it work as a undrafted free agent. Chris Wilcox, I'm assuming you're on the same boat here as me. He's got to get into the 4.3s. Yep. That's it, period. If he can get into the 4.3s, he's a day three guy. If he's in the 4.4s, 4.40, he does not have enough on tape that a team would take a flyer on him, because there are a lot of guys that run into the 4.4s. But if you could say 4.3, that's special. And that's when you start to get that second look from scouts who are like, whoa, wait, 4.3? Okay, he's fast.
Yeah. And so even looking at the last 2019, there were only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There were 13 guys at the NFL Combine in 2019 that ran under 4.4. And
that's any position.
Yeah, that's any position. And I mean, all of them, most of them were, well, all of them were either DBs or receivers. But they, and so, and obviously you're going to have a few more guys at pro days and whatnot, but he needs to get in that 4.4 if he wants to have a chance. And I agree. And lastly, Matt Bushman. I think Matt Bushman needs to run a sub 4.7 40. You have a 4.29. You have a sub 4.3 shuttle, which is similar. He just has to not look slow. Like he needs to get it on number. And I don't know. And I've argued with this about people of like who is faster between right now between Isaac Rex and Matt Bushman. When I don't know like how, like, cause like Matt Bushman, he doesn't glide. He doesn't look very explosive. He's a rumbler. Right.
And so it's a rumble.
So when he's rumbling down the field, it looks like he's towing a trailer, and he needs to get a number on paper that shows that the trailer has been unhooked from that hitch, because it doesn't matter. Like if you look slow on tape, right, it's kind of weird, right? Like it's, if you look at someone like Johnny Manziel, he's kind of like the opposite of that, right? Like you look at his 40 time, he ran line like the 4.7s, but you watched him play and he played a lot faster than that because he could cut and whatever, and he played fast. Matt Bushman looks slow as hell when he plays. But somehow he gets behind guys, but then he always gets caught from behind, right? And so it's, he needs to just show up and be like, look, no, like I am fast enough. Like it's, I, for whatever reason, with his build, his stride, he looks slow, but if he can prove that he's fast enough, then he's fine. But he's just got to pass that eye test with speed.
See, and I actually think he gets drafted even as a rumbler. And you're right. I mean, like, I hate that I continue to go to big game references when it comes to tight ends. But he doesn't run like a deer. He runs like a moose, right? Like a deer can run through the woods and you just hear little tiny footprints as they bound their way through the trees. A moose is just knocking trees over and going straight. Like that's how Matt runs. To me, even more than his speed, because even as a rumbler, I think he gets drafted because he's just got elite hands. He's just got to show that Achilles is okay. And that's tough to do. And so that's why I went with the shuttle, because I think that shows more of the explosion than just that straight line 40. But you could pick one. The broad jump, I think, is going to be big for Matt Bushman too. Like he's just got to show that Achilles is a thing of the past. And even guys like Taysom, like I think people now tend to forget what Taysom was in 2016, but I remember endless comments on the message boards and on my Twitter feed after BYU beat Arizona that Taysom was slow, that Taysom looks like he's lost a couple steps. And that's just the nature of a major injury on your foot. And Bushman's got to show that's a thing of the past. And so however that is, whether that's with the sub 4 740 or whether that's with some of these other agility type things or just pure explosion in the vert, all of them are going to be really critical for him. He's has to show that's the one thing, and he can do it in a number of different ways, but the one thing that I think he has to do is show people that Achilles injury is a thing of the past. Was it Achilles? It was Achilles, right? Or was it Liz Frank?
Bushman yeah. Was Achilles. Taysom was Liz Frank.
Right.
Injury. And so, there are other players obviously doing this, and I don't know how this works. So Zach Dawes is also going, Zane Anderson out of this year, obviously Troy Warner, Isaiah Kafusi, Kavika Fanua, Micah Simon is making a comeback. Oliva
Hufo's
giving another run, and Bo freaking Tanner. I do not understand how Bo Tanner, nobody has left a program, walked out the door and come back in more than Bo Tanner. And then also I don't get like Bachelor Johnson, which I only remember who he is because his name is Bachelor. That's someone who walked on to BYU at BYU, like went on a mission or did something, walked on at the U, then transferred back from the U and walked on again at BYU and hasn't been on the team since like 2018. And somehow he's back. So I don't know if it's just like,
hey, man,
I don't get it. Cause it's like, he didn't even play. I don't even think he recorded a stat.
The last pro day that I went to was the pro day that featured Tanner Mangum, Corbin Kafusi, Dylan Colley. What's his name? The small little DB.
Oh, let me see.
Like short. Oh crap. What's his name? Because he actually was the one who impressed me the most, but I can't remember his name. That played a ton in like 2018 that nobody expected him to play.
No. Okay. I'm trying to find,
I'm going
to
look it up because
I can't find the 2019. We can
Squally Canada ran in that one.
Here we go. I found it. Let's see. Squally,
Michael Shelton.
Oh, Michael.
That's
Shelton.
Who it was. Matt Hadley was there.
Braden El-Bakri.
It was guys with all due respect to them that they had no chance.
Yeah. So Squally Canada, Dylan Colley, Braden El-Bakri, Matt Hadley, Tanner Mangum, Michael Shelton, and then Sione Takitaki.
Yeah, so Takitaki was there. He was great. All the scouts who were there were looking at Takitaki, but like there weren't even representatives from every NFL team there. Like that was how bleak the pro prospects were for BYU this year or that year. This year, there's going to be GMs. Like there will be full-on GMs who make their way to Provo to watch this year's draft class. So it just, if Bachelor Johnson wants to get in on that, great. Because I remember the days when it was like, oh, 26 out of 32 NFL teams are here. There are six NFL teams who think so little of this draft class at BYU that they aren't even going to show up. So I'm glad that times have changed, even if Bachelor Johnson and Bo Tanner are working out. But you know, Bo Tanner, man, he's just like, and I say this with love, he's a friggin' cockroach, man. Like, how many times does that guy have to leave the program and still show up on various things?
The most annoying thing to me about Bo Tanner was when how he never had his mouthpiece in. And but I remember the only thing, two things I remember about Bo Tanner were, well, three. One, him getting blasted on Twitter when he like quit and then wanted to come back and walked on again. Two, him getting absolutely destroyed and just watching someone walk into the end zone against USF. And three, being so close to like a 95-yard pick six and getting chased down from behind in Logan, because he was hauling on that. And so actually, I'm very curious to see what Bo Tanner does, because I want to see, like, you know, just what Bo Tanner does. I want to see him run and see what kind of numbers he puts up.
The other thing that I'm most interested about with Pro Day season is the spin that we're going to hear out of Salt Lake City after NFL Utes, right? And then without question, it is undeniable the amount of success that the Utes have had in the NFL draft recently. Like, they've had a ton of players who have been drafted. Not only do they not have anybody who is projected to be a draft pick this year, they are not even having a pro day.
Yeah, that's...
they have to be the only Power 5 team who is not even hosting a pro day at all, right?
I mean, maybe Kansas isn't.
I think even Kansas is going to have, like, what's their running back's name? Isn't he going to try to go pro? I don't know.
Yeah,
but like,
he does. They already had their pro day. So,
yeah. So,
yeah, Puka Williams ran a 4.37 40.
There you go. So to not even have one at all, like, that's strange. Especially a program that has had so much NFL success. Now, the spin, let's just prepare ourselves for it. The spin is going to be Brant Keithy decided to come back. Devin Lloyd decided to come back. So there were a handful of players who came back instead of going pro. That's great. And Utah, I don't know. Maybe they're great next year. Maybe they're not. I have no idea. I still just can't wrap my head around that. That's shocking. Even for just seniors, even for their Dylan Colley, Corbin Kafusi, Michael Shelton draft class, like, have a pro day.
Or at least, like, say we're doing it and, you know, we're going to go down to Provo and join up with them, which they've done before, right? Like, who was it? There was like Christian Stewart threw at Utah's pro day for them.
Oh yeah.
Because there's no one to throw to it, like, a few years ago. So it's like, right, you know, get them out, right? Like, that's fine. But
very weird.
So I'm looking at this and there are, there are 112 pro days scheduled. I imagine most of them, you know, are going to have, I mean, North Dakota State is having a pro day.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I'm not doing? I mean, there's a list. Criticizing.
We could go through there and I can tally it up. Actually, maybe I will do that.
I'm not criticizing the fact that they won't have players drafted. Like, they've had a ton of players get drafted. Your most likely draft picks did come back. So I get it. I understand not having a player drafted. I do not understand not even having a pro day. Like, that is just beyond weird to me.
Yeah, I don't get it either. But that is at 10 a.m. Mountain on Friday morning. You can watch it, stream it on BYUtv.org or the BYU app, or if you have the NFL Network, you can tune into that. Jeff, it's been a good episode. This is back to a long one. This feels like an in-season episode. We had
this does
jam-packed agenda today, and it's been a good day.
It has. It has been a very good day. I'm trying to get in shape. That's what I'm going to end this this episode with. I bought a rower because while I want to get in shape, I'm still lazy. Right. And everybody needs to recognize that. And I have read that if you could only do one exercise machine, the rower exercises, it gives you the best full body workout if you're only going to do one thing.
Most bang for your buck.
Yeah. So I bought a rower And I've kind of been intrigued by the rower ever since the first season of House of Cards. That's what he uses. Frank has a rower in his basement. And so I have been appealed by it since then. So I bought one, a water rower that is made of wood. It's going to be pretty large and obnoxious to fit in my room, but whatever. And that is my quest over the next couple of weeks. Not to get in shape over the next couple of weeks. It's going to be a process because I'm very, very out of shape. But building this rower is my quest over the next couple of weeks. It gets here, I think, over the weekend. And then I have to figure out how to build it over the next couple of weeks.
I wouldn't actually mind having a rower. I've messed around with them before. And they're, you know, it'll get you. Like, you're going to feel it.
Oh, yeah. Well, if I walk up the stairs too fast, I feel it a little bit. So, yeah, rower's going to get me for sure.
And with that, Jeff, give that rower hell.
Give him hell.